Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the meeting of the State Coastal Conservancy. My name is Doug Bosco, and I chair the board. And I'd like to introduce all the other members of our board, some of whom are here and others of whom are in TV land. And all welcome. First of all, to my far left is Michelle Perrault, who represents the Department of Finance. Of course, that's a very important job for all of us that depend on the Department of Finance for our money. And right next to me, to my left, is Carol Hart. Carol is the chair of the State Coastal Commission, and by virtue of her appointment to that by the governor, she sits on our board. To my immediate right is Brian Cash. Brian represents the Resources Agency. And on the Zoom, I'll introduce Jerry Hallisey. Jerry was appointed by the governor. Joyce Sterling, who is appointed by the state senate. Mars Gutierrez-Groudon, who is our vice chair. And Mars was appointed by the state assembly. And Kara Woodruff, who represents Senator John Laird. Also here in front of me is our wonderful staff, Amy Hutzel, our executive officer, Amy Roach, our general counsel, and Paul Johnson, our board clerk. Have I forgotten anyone? Usually I do forget someone, so. Okay, I'm going to turn this over now to Amy Hutzel, who will have some directions as to how to access the board if you're not here or even if you are here. But go ahead, Amy.
Great. So thank you, Chair Bosco. So we're meeting today at the River Lodge Conference Center in Fortuna. I really want to thank our hosts, and I just want to note that we're working with the City of Fortuna on the Great Redwood Trail and on other projects. So thanks to the City of Fortuna for hosting us. I also want to thank everyone involved with the board tour yesterday. We went to ARAW, or the Prairie Creek Restoration Site. Really want to thank Save the Redwoods League. Want to thank the Yurok Tribe, Caltrout, and I want to thank Sue Corbelly, the Conservancy Project Manager, who has brought that project to fruition. It was amazing to see the restoration under construction. So today, we've done our best to plan for a hybrid meeting, and I want to thank staff and AGP Video for all the work making that happen so that members of the public are able to watch and participate remotely. If you are attending in person and you want to speak on any item on the agenda, please fill out a speaker card, which is in the back of the room, and hand it to Paul Johnson, the board clerk, who will pass it on to Chair Bosco. And this includes grantees and partners who want to speak here in the room on an item. Be sure to indicate which item you want to speak about on the speaker card. If you're in the room, please also make sure your cell phones and other electronic devices are silent during the meeting. You have two options for watching the meeting remotely, the webcast and on Zoom. If you want to speak on an item, you need to join the meeting on Zoom. If you don't plan to speak on an item, you can watch the meeting on the webcast. If you're watching on the webcast right now, and you want to speak on an item, then go to our website at scc.ca.gov, click on Meetings and Notices, and register to speak. You will be emailed a Zoom link. On Zoom, you use the raise hand button, or you press *9 if you're using your phone, to speak at the appropriate time on the agenda. We'll call on people and move them over to the panelist screen to make comments. That little transition takes a little bit of time, so be patient. You'll see like a swirling circle. You have to unmute yourself in order to speak. We cannot unmute you from here. Spanish translation is available for the meeting on Zoom. There's a globe icon on the bottom of the Zoom screen, and you can select Spanish. And that's it on the announcement. So back to you, Chair Bosco.
Thank you very much, Amy. Paul, would you please call the roll?
For those of you on Zoom, please unmute your mics. Ms. Hart?
Present.
Mr. Cash?
Here.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Here.
Ms. Perrault?
Here.
Mr. Hallisey?
Present.
Jerry?
Yes.
I know you're here.
I'm here from TV land.
Ms. Sterling?
Here.
Chair Bosco?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you. Next, we'll have approval of the minutes of our June 6th meeting. Are there any changes, additions, corrections to that? If not, Mr. Cash, will you move?
Yeah, and move approval.
Ms. Hart, second.
I wasn't at that meeting, so I'll be abstaining.
Okay, Mr. Hallisey, you were there. Would you second the minutes of the June 6th meeting, please? Jerry?
Jerry, you're muted again.
Okay.
I second the minutes of the last meeting.
All right, thank you. Those in favor? Do we have to have a roll call on the minutes,
yes,
too? Okay, we have to have a roll call on the minutes because of the Zoom characteristic. Go ahead, Paul. Okay.
Ms. Hart?
Abstain.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Abstain.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
This motion passes. Item 2 is approved.
Thank you. Next, we'll go on to the consent items. These are projects of less than $500,000 or continuations of previously approved projects. Are there any public comments on the consent calendar?
We have no public comments.
Okay, do I hear a motion?
Wait, one second. We do have a raised hand.
We have a raised hand. All right.
Michael, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Michael Beck with the Endangered Habitats Conservancy. We're the applicants for this project. I wanted to take just a brief moment to offer our sincere appreciation to the Coastal Conservancy. Your funding got this project off the ground. It was the first in funding 7 or 8 years ago. We've made great, great progress, and it's really a kind of a precedent-setting floodplain restoration project, which is going to reconnect the Russian River to a dynamic, self-sustaining floodplain. It's really critical for three listed salmonids. Brian Kluhr he's with National Marine Fisheries Service, and he's our lead scientist and geomorphologist, hydrogeomorphologist. And to paraphrase what Brian offered at one point in a hearing, he's in charge of taking down dams on rivers in the western U.S. for nymphs, and said that this project is going to add more benefit to the recovery of these species than taking down a dam. So it's really critical. And then in closing, I want to acknowledge your staff grant administrator for our project, Michael Bowen, who's been really just an essential part of our core team. He's part of every discussion and technical analysis that we've been going through. I've never worked with a grant administrator who's more hands-on and more helpful to the overall success of the project. So I just wanted to offer those thoughts as well. Again, thank you so much for supporting this important project.
Well, thank you, and for all of your hard work as well. Are there any other comments?
You have no more public comments.
All right. Can I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Michelle moves.
Second.
Ms. Hart seconds. And please call the roll.
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grautich?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Yes.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
The consent items are approved.
Okay, we'll now go on to the executive officer's report. Amy Hutzel, will you please conduct that?
Great. Thank you, Chair Bosco and members of the board. We have one presentation and then two action items today. Before the presentation, I did just want to call your attention to a letter that was sent by Solano Land Trust. It's linked to the comments on non-agenda items, if you want to read the letter. In short, we celebrated with Solano Land Trust a couple weeks ago the opening of Patuino Wortla Kadoy Dihi Open Space in Solano County. It's just north of Fairfield. And 11 or 12 years ago, the Conservancy had worked with Solano Land Trust. We were the first funders coming in for the acquisition of that land, made that possible. And then Solano Land Trust has worked with the Yocha Dihi Wintun Tribe and with many other partners in Solano County to design just a fabulous park that has an all-people's trail that is really so well thought out in terms of encouraging and supporting people with disabilities getting out into the outdoors, and all the work with the tribe on the naming of the park, the interpretive features. It's an amazing spot, and I really encourage everybody to go visit, probably best in the spring. But a beautiful new park. And I'll just add one more thing for Brian's sake. The Solano County Board of Supervisors voted to approve the use of the state parks passes at two of the parks in Solano County, including this new park. So you don't have to get a separate pass. Once you have the state parks pass, it provides free parking at this park. So that was a really nice partnership too. And now I'm gonna turn it over to Mary Small for the annual financial report.
I do push button. Okay, good morning. As the board knows, every year at the beginning of our state fiscal year, we provided a financial report that tries to explain the state budget in kind of plain language for the board and for our partners and the public.
A daunting task.
It's a daunting task, but we've been doing it for a long time now, so that's the purpose of this report. And for the Coastal Conservancy, we think about our budget really in two parts. There's the money that we have for our projects, and then the money we have for our support budget that pays for our staff and our rent, basically. In terms of the project funding, as you know, the last 4 years, we have had an unprecedented amount of money. And it's easy to say that, but that is actually, the charts really lay that out for you. And if you look at those budgets in aggregate, over those 4 years, we had $838 million appropriated to the Conservancy, primarily for urgent sea level rise and coastal resilience projects, also for wildfire resilience work, and for legislative priority projects. By the end of this calendar year, we expect all of those funds to have been allocated to projects. And so if it feels like it has been busy, it has. Last year, we authorized $343 million for projects. That is more than we have ever authorized in the past 25 years by a lot, more than twice what we had ever authorized before. And that was really in response to the urgency of the crisis that we're facing and the timing of that funding. We track, as you know, as part of our strategic plan, how much of our funding benefits what we described as systemically excluded communities, which is a pretty broad definition. 66% of our funds since January of 2023 have benefited systemically excluded communities. Since 2018, we have been tracking how much of our funding either is goes to projects located in or benefiting disadvantaged communities, which is a different definition. That's 80% of the median household income in California. And 55% of our funding since 2018 has either been located in or benefited disadvantaged communities. So we're really proud of that commitment and that ongoing tracking. We also track how much of our funding has been matched with other state funding and federal funding. Last year, you authorized $343 million in projects. That was matched by $635 million, primarily of federal funding. And on that note, we applied for 20 grants last year. And actually, we do this report on the fiscal year. So it is July 1st to June 30th. July 1st to June 30th, we applied for 20 grants. Since July 1st, we've applied for 15 more. So there will be even more next year. But we were awarded $42 million in external funding, primarily to go to our projects on the ground. So that's sort of the picture. It has been really busy. It has been an incredible period of time. In terms of future project funding, we do not have... We've allocated all of the funding that has been appropriated to us. We have had almost all of the bond funds from prior bonds has been appropriated to us. So future budget appropriations, we don't expect to have nearly that volume of funding. It will be much leaner years ahead, unless something were to change. In terms of the support budget, As I said, primarily our support budget pays for our staff. 80% of our budget is salaries and benefits. We did add staff in 22-23, which was the first increase in a very long time. We have always been very mindful that we don't have a continuous source of funding, and so we're very careful about trying to live within our means, and part of this report is... Because we don't have a single source that pays for our operations, we try and plan ahead to be sure that we have funding to pay for our staff, that we can see how we're going to make it all work, looking 5 years at least into the future. As I said, the workload has been really high, and I would just remind the board that when we authorized the project, that's actually the beginning. So while we took all those projects to the board last year, and you'll probably see fewer projects coming to the board in 2025, staff are going to be busy. We have work that will be extending out, implementing those projects. In terms of our long-term funding plan, because we were allowed to take a small percentage of that one-time general fund for our staffing, that, assuming that we are able to continue to have the annual appropriations from the Environmental License Plate Fund and the other little bits and pieces that we pull together, we see that we definitely have adequate funding if we keep our operating budget at about a constant through 2930. So that's actually, whenever I give this presentation, I think it makes staff really nervous. For us, that is great. Like, we are in good shape. We can kind of see that. I based this on the governor's budget. There are also, as Brian and Michelle are aware, there are exercises underway of reductions, which for us really just will allow us to have that funding into the future. And so that is my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
I just had a comment.
Yes, go ahead, Brian.
I just want to... give the staff kudos and leadership kudos for getting an unprecedented amount of money out the door over the last two or three years. I know the work that went into it. And the, you know, the gravity of the problem we're facing with climate change, sea level rise, is huge. So the fact that you were able to get that much money out the door and to address those issues, it's amazing. So, and just want you to know, Secretary Crowfoot, all the leadership at agency are aware of this, and you know, provide their kudos too. So, thank you.
Thank you. I would just build on to that as a new member of the board. First of all, I thought the report was fantastic because it was really laid out clearly, you know, what the result is of what this year's leaner budget, but also shows so clearly how the money has been spent and what the accomplishments were. And it's just stunning what the Conservancy was able to do and how quickly you all were able to respond to that moment in time where you have an opportunity to do so much. So I just have to say, I just am so grateful for the work that you've done. Thank you very much.
Mary, is there going to be a bond measure on the ballot? And if so, what?
Yes, there is a bond measure that is on the ballot. The administration has not taken a position on the bond, but it's Prop 4. And if it were to pass, it has almost $1 billion for the Coastal Conservancy.
And what's the measure number?
Number 4.
Measure 4?
Measure 4.
So even though the administration may not have taken a stance on it, any one of us individually could do that in our own communities or whatever. That would be voted on in November?
That'll be voted on in November.
Good. I want to say, too, that not all of what we do by far is spending money. So we can use this time that maybe we don't have as much money to spend to do other things, to look at our projects, to get to know some of our people better, their agencies better. Certainly yesterday, the wonderful field trip that we had in the Yurok territory is a good example of the kind of things that we can do to keep up on what we have already funded. So not a total loss by any means. Okay, well, thank you, Mary. And Amy, this is your report.
Great, thank you, and thanks to Mary for that report. The next item is the board meeting schedule for 2025, and we are proposing 4 board meetings in 2025.
Hey,
we typically do 5.
I'm good. Yeah, I wanted to see if you can make some time to have lunch and...
Somebody's having lunch.
Anybody having a lunch date that... raise your hand.
I like that. Yeah, I like lunch. Okay, so we're proposing 4 board meetings next year instead of 5. And just to explain that, we've had this June board meeting in Sacramento for many, many years, and we had set it up so... even during a very busy time for the state, especially for Brian and Michelle, we could go to the board in June and encumber any money that's expiring on June 30th. But with the new fiscal system, we have to encumber money in the April timeframe. So the June meeting is not as essential as it was. It's a busy time of year. And given our project funding situation, if the bond were to pass, the soonest funding would be appropriated to us would be July of 2025. So I am proposing 4 meetings for 2024. We could go back to 5 meetings in future years. So February 13th in Oakland, April 17th on the Central Coast with a board tour the day before, September 18th, somewhere in the Bay Area, not Oakland, with the tour the day before, and November 20th in Oakland. And I would also point out that this allows us to save some money in 2025 on the board meetings, and then continuing to do the 2 in Oakland, just easier access for staff and for some of our board members. And then the 2 board meetings during the less rainy time of the year, where we can go out into the field and see project sites. So that's the proposal, and it's an action item.
Okay, do I hear a motion that we approve the schedule?
Move approval.
Okay, Mr. Cash moves.
Second.
Ms. Perrault seconds. Those in favor, please say aye, but we'll take it. Roll call.
All right, Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grouditch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Yes.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
This motion passes.
All right.
Great. And now on to the sad part of the EO report, retirements. And before moving on to Mary Small, I wanted to mention that Greg Gaucher is retiring. He's been with the Conservancy for over 18 years. He serves as the deputy regional manager in Southern California, and he's been involved in many impactful projects at our agency, from the Southern California Wetlands Recovery Project to running our entire Santa Ana River Conservancy program and really setting up that program. And then more recently launching a grant program to provide grants to make the coast more accessible for people with disabilities. So he's going to be really missed by his coworkers and all the people he works with. I mean, the Santa Ana River Conservancy people are particularly sad to see him go. He has a lot of empathy and a very kindful member of our management team. So I want to thank Greg for all his work and really wish him the best in his retirement. Yay for Greg. Okay, and then Mary Small, the Deputy Executive Officer at the Conservancy, who just presented the financial report, and we will try to maintain the caliber of the financial report in the future. Might get harder. So there's a resolution in honor of Mary Small, and it's 2 pages long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just want to read some of the highlights. Whereas Mary has been with the Conservancy for 24 years, whereas she worked as acting executive officer for 6 months after Sam Schuchat retired, making her the agency's first female executive officer. Where she has mentored innumerable staff and fellows. She supports and believes in her coworkers and colleagues. She's everyone's go-to person for solving project challenges and budget issues. She's managed critical land acquisitions. She's expanded the Bay Area Ridge Trail and the Coastal Trail and helped to launch the Great Redwood Trail. She established the Los Cerritos Wetlands Authority. She bicycled the Santa Ana River Parkway from one end to the other. She has worked closely with the administration and the legislature over many years on our budget and on our priorities. She has tackled Fiscal, Airtables, ABCRS, Hyperion, TAB runs, BCPs, and many other complicated budget stuff. That's our official term for it, with humor, grace, and intelligence. She's an expert user of Microsoft Excel, despite her choice of a career in coastal conservation. And she's just been a really constant source of calm and positivity, especially during the roller coaster funding years. There's a series of quotes in here. I won't read them, but Jen Eckerly, the director of OPC, and Brian Cash provided a quote. David McNeil from the Baldwin Hills Conservancy, Val Termini, the chief deputy director of Department of Fish and Wildlife, Joe Edmiston of the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, Rebecca Friss from WCB, Annie Burke, the executive director of Together Bay Area, and Kate Hucklebridge, the executive director of the Coastal Commission. And if I had asked more people, this could have gone on for 100 pages. So the resolution is that the State Coastal Conservancy hereby recognizes and thanks Mary Small for her years of service to the people and environment of California and wishes her all the best as she embarks on the next chapter of her life story. And I'm going to really personally miss Mary tremendously.
Thank you, Amy. Are there any comments from the board? Ms. Hart?
I really think yes. Mary should have to come up.
You're hiding way back there.
Because I guess that was your last financial report.
And that's it.
You're presenting today. I just want to say that I guess we really came to know each other with the beginnings of the Great Redwood Trail. And I just was so impressed by you from the very beginning. Your incredible calm and confidence that, you know, this will happen. We will make this transition. We will move forward with this. And incredible expertise in everything you do. I don't know, I feel like I finally got on the Conservancy Board, and then two of my favorite people have just retired, and I know there's no real connection there. No, seriously, Mary, I just am going to miss you so much, but I'm so, so excited for you, all the things that are coming up, all the incredible outdoor adventures, and I hope we get to do some of them together. So congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Marsh, our vice chair.
Yes, thank you. I have to say, I got to know Ms. Small before I came on the board as a potential prospective grantee at the time. And I've been like a witness to how much effort and work she has put into really, really delivering and reaching and finding the people that most need these funds and making sure that these funds are really helping the communities that need them most. You know, the patience and the openness and the thoroughness in your dealing with potential grantees, prospective grantees, the encouragement. And I never did apply because I ended up coming on the board. But also, obviously, like very, very thankful for your support through this whole time on the board, and very, but very excited to be able to fetch you today, and to obviously very sad that you are moving on to a very well-deserved retirement, and hopefully again see you in a more social capacity as Ms. Hart said. But I do want to say, you know, as someone that has dealt with many agencies in California, coastal agencies in what has been a new subject at the time and what has been a prickly and possibly uncomfortable discussion at the time, it has been refreshing how much patience and grace and openness and proactiveness we've seen from Small, and we will miss you severely. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Morris. Ms. Sterling? Joy?
Yes, I just want to add my thanks to the chorus. Particularly, it's sort of strange that I now am leaving the rich years for the lean years. But I just want to say thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
Brian?
Yeah, I just want to, it seems like we've been on a journey together, Mary. I joined the board about 17 years ago. I think it was 17. It's been a while. And I've seen Mary just rise up through the ranks and really became the go-to person for agency when we had to address any issues. And we're going to really miss that. I mean, our, not only from my perspective, but our bonds and grants unit, whenever they had issues that they needed to work out, they would call and, what does Mary think about this? And so it's just, it's going to be an absence, but we really appreciate all you've done, and just to make the coast a better place and to keep it an incredible place for, you know, a rich rich place for California. Thanks.
Well, I'll say a few words, and I, if it's appropriate to say something like this in a public meeting, I love you, Mary. I came on the board shortly after Mary did and or became part of our staff. And at the time, there was a major battle going on over this tiny little beach in Southern California called La Chusa Beach. And that battle was between Joe Edmiston and the Santa Monica Conservancy and a large variety of neighbors. And interestingly, the neighbors were major contributors to environmental causes. I mean, big time check writers. So this was a particularly tense endeavor. And Mary, thank goodness she was by my side at all times, because her countenance is one of peace and quiet and moving forward and accomplishing. And at the time, I would get very angry at one part of this group or other part of the group. Mary would calm everything down, and eventually the problem got solved. I'm not even sure if the beach is still there. It was a very small beach in the ocean.
It's there.
It's still there. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to miss you terribly, Mary, and it is a shame that your last report is, you know, one that hopefully we won't be repeating. But we'll remember you for many, many years of good reports. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That it really means a lot. And yeah, I love the Conservancy. It's been incredible. And yeah, I think it's a, you know, we are facing leaner times, but I think that I feel like I'm leaving the agency in really amazing shape. You know, Brian, it has been a journey, and we really have matured and grown up as an organization. You know, when I came, the Conservancy had just celebrated being 25 years old, and now it's almost 50 years old, and I think we have matured. You know, we've embedded equity in what we do. We have, you know, in the last 5 years, you see how great our project staff are, but in the last 5 years, we have entirely new management on the administrative side. And this is like, this shows the kind of nerd that I am. And they're amazing, and they're working so hard, and we're really lucky to have them. And so I feel really good about leaving. And I would say this is the first year since we transitioned to Fiscal that we did year-end close on time, which for us is amazing because it's a lot of work. And so we're really making good progress. And I'm really grateful for the opportunities that I've had. I have been able to do a lot of things here. And I think that we have so much talent in this agency. We will be fine. And I'm really happy to create a space for someone else to step in. And they will do it differently, but they will be brilliant, I am sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this is an action item. I hope the vote goes well.
Mr. Cash, do you want to move approval?
Yes, move approval.
And
I can second.
Okay, good. Our vice chair. Please call the roll, Paul.
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Hold on one second. Hold on.
Aye.
Okay. Mr. Hallison?
That was an aye.
I got it. Okay. Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Mr. Hallison?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
This motion passes.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, that concludes the EO report.
All right, we'll now move on to the project part of our agenda. And the first is to disperse up to $8.5 $1 million to save the Redwoods League. And that will be presented by Joel Gerwin. Joel.
Thanks. I just wipe away a tear here before I start. Good morning, Chairman Bosco and Conservancy Board members. I'll be presenting the Lost Coast Redwoods DeVilbiss Ranch acquisition project for your consideration. If you could bring up the presentation, please. Thank you. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorized disbursement of $8.5 million to save the Redwoods League to repay private loans used to acquire the 3,187-acre DeVilbiss Ranch in northern coastal Mendocino County. This grant will enable Save the Redwoods League to transfer ownership of the entire 4,566-acre Lost Coast Redwoods property, which is made up of DeVilbiss Ranch, which our funds are going to, Shady Dell, which we provided a grant to acquire years ago, and Cape Vizcano tracts, to the U.S. Bureau of Land Management for permanent protection and long-term management. This project will protect, restore, and maintain in perpetuity the site's natural resources, open space, and California Native American tribal cultural resources. In addition, BLM will manage the property's forest for wildfire resilience, practice restoration forestry, and develop public access compatible with cultural and natural resource protection. You can see in the picture on this opening slide a view to the north over the western coastal portion of the property, which, as you can see, is a magnificent part of the coast. Next slide, please. As highlighted on this map, the Lost Coast Redwood property is comprised of three tracts, totaling 4,566 acres, adjacent to the southern end of California's renowned Lost Coast. The appropriately named Lost Coast is where Highway 1 turns in to join Highway 101, and people traveling in vehicles up the coast on Highway 101 don't get to see the ocean again until they reach Humboldt Bay, about 90 miles to the north. So it creates this area isolated from the highway where there's a trail, the Lost Coast Trail, that offers one of the few coastal wilderness hiking experiences in the United States. Now, once this Lost Coast Redwoods property is in public ownership, there'll be a new key section added to a connected landscape along a 45-mile stretch of the Lost Coast. So that's one aspect of this project that's really exciting. The property is adjacent to large areas of protected land and water, including the 7,800-acre Sinkyon Wilderness State Park and the 4,500-acre Sinkyon Intertribal Wilderness Council land to the north, and the almost 50,000-acre Redwood Forest Foundation property to the east. So big landscape of protected lands. Beginning in 2008 and completed in 2021, as opportunities arose, Save the Redwoods League acquired the three tracts that make up the Lost Coast Redwoods property with the intention to eventually transfer the entire holding into public ownership for permanent protection. If the league had not acquired the three tracts quickly, an industrial timber company would have acquired them, threatening the old growth and second growth redwoods, fragmenting habitat, and removing public access opportunities. Since acquiring the tracts, the league has managed the landscape to promote a healthy ecosystem and developed a public trail on Shady Dell with conservancy funding. The league is now seeking to sell the entire Lost Coast Redwood property to BLM for public protection and management. Next slide. The Lost Coast Redwoods property includes 3,166 acres of forested land, including old growth and mature second growth California redwood Doug fir forest, as well as 30 miles of class 1, 2, and 3 salmonid and fish bearing streams. The land and streams provide high quality wildlife habitat for sensitive and endangered species, including northern spotted owl, marbled murrelet, Pacific fisher, coho salmon, and steelhead trout. The property is also home to Roosevelt elk, bear, bobcats, and mountain lions. The islands just offshore, including Vizcano Rock, support more than 11,500 nesting seabirds and are part of the California Coastal Monument, also managed by BLM. The property has expansive coastal views and contains 7 miles of forest roads, which could serve as public access trails in the future. This project will permanently protect 3,587 acres of a 4,566-acre coastal landscape, considering that the Shady Dell property is already protected pursuant to our former grant to save the redwoods. The project will prevent habitat fragmentation and preserve connectivity to over 117,000 acres of contiguous protected lands, increasing the climate resilience of this ecosystem. It will also enhance climate resilience by managing for wildfire fuel reduction and protecting the carbon sequestration potential of the forest. And it will provide opportunities to expand public access to the southern extent of the renowned Lost Coast. Next slide. The Lost Coast Redwood property's current appraised value is $53,940,000 for all three tracts together. The League intends to donate $9,814,500 of the property's value in a bargain sale. BLM has committed to pay the League $27,125,500 for the property, and the remaining $17 million will be provided to the League through this recommended grant, which is specifically for the DeVilbiss property, and an $8.5 million grant from the Wildlife Conservation Board, which was authorized 2 weeks ago on August 22nd. Once transferred to BLM, the League will continue to advise and provide expertise that has gained from the restoration forestry techniques successfully practiced through its Redwoods Rising initiative. The project enjoys broad support. And last slide, please. This slide shows a view from the forest floor with redwood sorrel in the foreground. Redwood sorrel makes a lovely pink flower and is part of a healthy diet for banana slugs, Pacific giant salamanders, red-bellied newts, bobcats, and many others. You could try munching on a little of it the next time you're in the redwoods. The humble redwood sorrel teaches us the importance of landscape-scale projects like these that protect the entire forest ecosystem from the tiny plants on the forest floor to the towering redwoods above. And with that little moral lesson, I conclude my presentation. We have our partners here today. Jeff Stump, the Director of Land Protection at the League, and Suzanne Moss, the Director of Public and Institutional Funding, are here in person. And Sam Hodder, the League's President, is on the Zoom meeting. And Colin Ewing, the manager of BLM's Arcata field office, is also here in person. I believe Sam and I think Colin had a few words they wanted to say, and then we are all available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Why don't we start with the words you'd like to say, and then we'll have the question.
Terrific. Mr. Chairman, are you passing the mic to me, or was someone else lining up? I'm sorry, I'm on the Zoom, can't see quite what's going on in the room.
Oh, go ahead, Sam.
Okay, great. Sam Hodder here, President and CEO of Save the Redwoods League. I'm sorry I can't be there in person with you, but I first wanted to offer a huge thank you and appreciation and celebration for coastal warrior Mary Small for all of your great work to protect our wonderful coast for everyone. Best wishes on your retirement, Mary, and to Greg as well. I'm so sorry there weren't more redwoods in your district, Greg. But what an incredible career you've had. I also wanted to quickly echo Brian Cash and Carol Hart's remarks earlier in the program in support of the Conservancy staff and partners. It is an extraordinary level of effectiveness and professionalism reflected by Amy and Sue Corbley and Joel and Mary, the ones we get to work with most frequently, and many, many more in getting critical funds on the ground to do the great work of conserving and restoring the California coast. You're at the front lines of building resilience throughout the California coast and doing absolutely critical work. I only hope that the people of California know how lucky they are to have this conservancy doing this extraordinary work up and down the California coast. Save the Redwoods League is so grateful to the Coastal Conservancy for considering our grant request to fund the transfer of the Lost Coast Redwoods property to the Bureau of Land Management. The Lost Coast Redwoods is remarkable. It spans 8 miles of rugged, undeveloped Mendocino coastline that includes redwood forests, coastal bluffs, beaches, trails, open space, and streams. The League stepped in to make sure these forests could be protected for future public ownership. And that's why we're transferring the property to the BLM now, which manages the nearby Kings Range National Conservation Area. The League is proud to work with your great staff, the Intertribal Sinkione Wilderness Council, the Wildlife Conservation Board, the BLM, and other partners to protect this special forest and coastline. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, hey, this is Colin Ewing. I'm the field manager for the Bureau of Land Management Arcata Field Office. So yeah, thanks for coming up to see us in Humboldt County here. It's great to have you here. BLM Arcata Field Office manages 220,000 acres of public lands in Del Norte, Mendocino, Trinity, and Humboldt counties. And our mission is to sustain the health, diversity, and productivity of the nation's public lands for the benefit and enjoyment of present and future generations. So with your support, we'd like to add 4,500 more acres to our lands here in Mendocino County and manage them to benefit the public of the United States and the state of California. This is a really big project, and Joel and Sam told you all about what a wonderful property that is, so I'll skip that part that I had written in my notes. But those dollar amounts that Joel showed, that's a really big acquisition for the BLM, and it's pretty impressive. Me coming new to this landscape of coastal conservation, moving to California just 2 years ago, I'm really impressed with the agencies in the state of California that really put your money where your mouth is with 30 by 30 in conservation of public lands and putting these lands into public ownership for the benefit of the public and for conservation. This, you know, you showed, Joel, that the BLM is bringing $27 million to the table. We wouldn't have gotten that $27 million if we didn't have all this matching funding, hopefully, from the state and also from the League. That's pretty impressive. And with your help, we've got a couple other big acquisitions coming up to where the BLM Arcata Field Office is bringing in 40% of the National Land and Water Conservation Fund core budget this year. But that's thanks to all of you for helping us as partners and matching that, because we certainly couldn't pull it off. You know, Land and Water Conservation Fund was permanently reauthorized in 2019 and fully funded. So we've got this charge from the American public that they want more public lands conserved for their use. It's really amazing to see the state of California stepping up and helping us make that happen. So like you all said, it's an amazing property. I'll skip that part, but I do want to mention the amazing partnerships that we're working on and getting in place for the management of this land. That continued partnership with Save the Redwoods League is really important. They're not going to walk away from us. They're staying here to help us manage this land and facilitate working with other partners. The Intertribal Sinkione Wilderness Council, even though it's not BLM land yet, we've already started consulting with them and their 10-member tribes. The council is facilitating the consultation with 10-member tribes. We want to talk about the naming of the property. Lost Coast is actually maybe not the correct term because these lands were never lost to the people who have lived here from time immemorial. So we want to talk more about naming. And then, of course, the future management vision and co-stewardship and collaborative management with the tribes. So we're really excited that we've got that going, and we're going out with the tribes again next week on the land to keep that conversation going. And then, of course, state parks. This is adjacent to the Sinkione Wilderness State Park. We're excited to explore opportunities to work closely with state parks on managing this as a landscape. Sinkione Wilderness State Park connects the King Range and then these properties, the Lost Coast Redwoods. So it's really important that we all work together to do what's best for the public and for the land out there. So, I just want to, again, thank Save the Redwoods League. Catherine Elliott is project manager. She's working really hard on this. Hopefully she's able to join on Zoom. And, of course, Joel for his hard work on this. And hope you all will support it. Thanks.
Thank you, Colin.
And shout out to Lisa Ames, who Lisa has done a lot of work to make this project get to this point as well. She retired, but she's still helping us.
And she was even on that. She was even on that long walk we took yesterday.
That's right.
All right. I just wanted to make one comment. This is a perfect example of the value that the Conservancy has in putting together disparate groups to accomplish a specific goal. And without our glue to hold all of this together, it might not happen. But we deal always with the most dedicated people, certainly the Save the Redwoods League. We have a long history of working on big projects with, and now the tribes are starting to take much more of an active role. And as we move forward into the future, that's sort of what I meant with the money's important, but it's also the organization to move these projects forward that is important too. And Joel, thank you for your work. All right, do we have a motion to? Yes.
I just want to say is, gosh, having been involved with so many aspects of this, including as a prior board member of Save the Redwoods League, and having been to some of these properties, Cape Buscino specifically, I can't wait to visit this property. I mean, it's bizarrely exciting. It's really hard to even stay in your seat when you hear about something. And your presentation was so great. And I also have to acknowledge Congressman Huffman, because I remember Suzanne from Save the Redwoods League, and I visited with him a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, on expansion and funding of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And we talked about specific property, and he was all in, and he assured us that he would do everything it takes to make this happen. And we're seeing this today. The incredible funding coming for BLM, and I just can't believe it, 40% coming to the North Coast. And it's just a validation of the importance of this landscape. So just, I think of all, when I look out of the window here and I look at the biodiversity that we're looking at, it's so true. It's the diversity of all of these partners. You know, it's both sides. And that's what we're seeing here. It's really exciting. I just want to express my gratitude to everyone. And I'm happy to make the motion.
All right. Ms. Hart moves. Who'd like to second it? Ms. Sterling, would you second this? Are you out there? Okay. Mr.
Second.
Ms. Sterling seconds that we approve item 5. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
This motion passes.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Great people to work with. All right, next we'll go on to item 6, which is the Noyo Harbor Marina Redevelopment Planning Project, and this will be presented by Fanny Yang. Fanny?
Yes. Good morning, Chairman Bosco and Conservancy Board members. Welcome to the North Coast. Happy to have you all here. I'm presenting for your consideration a grant to the Noyo Harbor District in the amount of $750,000 for the Noyo Harbor Marina Redevelopment Planning Project. The project consists of conducting community engagement, completing a planning study, preparing 60% designs, preparing permit applications and CEQA docs for the redevelopment of Noyo Harbor Marina in Mendocino County. Next slide, please. So a little background of Noyo Harbor. Noyo Harbor is located at the mouth of the Noyo River in the city of Fort Bragg. There's a long and rich history of commercial fishing, logging, and commerce. Noyo Harbor is one of the 4 main fishing ports between San Francisco and the Oregon border. It is also the only harbor of refuge between Bodega Bay, located in Sonoma County, and Humboldt Bay in Humboldt County. The harbor contains a 256 slip boat basin, and there is a substantial shoreside business cluster of about 25 businesses operating at or near the waterside area, serving the fishing community members that dock there and visitors to the area. I know that when I visit there every time, I always stop by for some fish and chips. Next slide, please. Originally constructed in the 1970s, the marina layout for the Noyo Harbor is not optimal right now for the current needs, And as you can see, the deteriorating infrastructure can no longer support the active wear and tear of a active facility. So since the marina was constructed to fishery as well as the average size of fishing boats and recreational vessels have increased, the harbor also has no longer any or enough slips of the appropriate size to serve the current fleet. Despite district staff's regular maintenance, regular maintenance schedule and budget for repairs, impacts from climate change, such as sea level rise and severe storm events, do continue to degrade the marina facilities. And here we can see on the slide, there's some marina infrastructure breaking down. Starting from the left, you have a broken mainframe on one of the wooden docks, broken end piles on a dock, and there are rusting brackets. And then the last photo on the right shows rotting dock planks. Next slide, please. The vision for the marina redevelopment is to utilize new docking layout and then also to increase the resiliency of the harbor infrastructure, mainly replacing the original wooden docks with concrete ones so that they will be able to withstand more intense storm events and continued sea level rise. The project will specifically take place in the current marina footprint area as shown in the yellow box. Next slide, please. Key deliverables of the proposed project include preparing a planning study that will allow the district to have a fuller understanding of the project scope required for the marina redevelopment. It will also include input from community members and permitting agencies. We will be completing 60% designs for updating the marina layout to better accommodate the needs of modern fishing and boating. On the slide, you can see a preliminary design plan for this. We will be preparing permits and going through the CEQA process for the dock replacement. The goal is to, again, replace the current wooden docks with concrete floating ones and then also replace the creosote pilings with concrete pilings. These deliverables are really important because it will enable the district to apply for future grants and funding for construction. Next slide, please. Maintaining a working waterfront is a key priority for the region, as identified by the district's community sustainability plan, which the Conservancy also funded in 2017. There was a significant amount of input put into the plan. There were surveys, interviews, stakeholder meetings that compiled the vision for the Noda Harbor community. The plan was completed in 2016, and it identifies the redevelopment and reconfiguring of the marina as a high priority for the Noyo Harbor community. Next slide, please. Benefits of a resilient Noyo Harbor. The project will contribute to a more vibrant and resilient Noyo Harbor by supporting commercial and recreational use of the harbor by the fishing community and also the community at large. The project will complement other ongoing improvement initiatives by the district, including an ice house and a field dock. And then together, these efforts will foster job creation for the fishing industry and also support up-and-coming blue economy initiatives in the region, such as abalone restoration and sea urchin aquaculture. The project will also contribute to the overall resiliency of the marina infrastructure to continued climate change impacts. Next slide, please. And so thank you. That concludes my presentation. Anna Newman, Harbor Master for the Noyo Harbor District, is here. And so we are available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right. Are there any questions from the public?
We have no public comments.
All right. Do I hear a motion that we approve item 6? Mr. Hallisey, do you want to move that?
I'll move it.
Thank you.
I'll second it.
Ms. Sterling seconds. Okay. Paul, will you call the roll?
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Parole?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
This motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, Fanning.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go on now to item 7, the Lighthouse Cove Lower Cost Accommodations Project. And this will be presented by Peter Jarusch. Peter?
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy. Staff recommends an authorization of up to $835,000 to the City of Crescent City for the Lighthouse Cove Lower Cost Accommodations Project in Crescent City. The project will create three lower cost units and renovate an existing bathroom at the City of Crescent City's Lighthouse Cove RV Park. Next slide, please. Del Norte County is a highly popular destination in the summer months. The main attractions are the amazing redwoods found in Redwood National and State Parks, the wild and scenic Smith River, and the county's extensive coastline with its wide sandy beaches. Crescent City serves as the gateway community to these scenic attractions and provides the many visitors with the necessary services. Due to the popularity of the area, it's hard to find a reasonably priced place to stay in the summer. The two largest campgrounds in the area, one at Jedediah Smith State Park and the other at Mill Creek, are reserved months in advance. These are justifiably popular spots to camp if you can get a spot. The hotels in Crescent City also raise their prices in the summer to more than $200 a night. There are a number of RV parks in the area, but the entry cost to those are relatively expensive purchase of a recreational vehicle. Next slide, please. Here you see a map of the Crescent City waterfront and the Lighthouse Cove RV Park. The RV park is owned and operated by the City of Crescent City, which will make these new units available at affordable rates. This shows the location of the proposed units, two cabins on the edge of Elk Creek and an apartment in the one building at the RV park. As you can also see from this map, the location is on the California Coastal Trail. The blue dashed line connects the location to the Crescent City Harbor to the south, and the white dashed line takes you to Beachfront Park and on to the Battery Point Lighthouse. Next slide, please. Here are two examples of the proposed cabins. These are both examples from Lancaster Cabins and would be delivered to the site. The only construction needed is to create an adequate parking spot and to connect the cabin to the utilities. The cabins are constructed on top of a trailer frame with wheels. Next slide, please. This is an example layout of one of the cabins. As you can see, these have been designed to be fully accessible. Next slide, please. And this is the other opportunity for a cabin. Each cabin can sleep up to six people with an optional futon. They also have a bathroom, eating area, and a small kitchen, perfect for a family or a group of friends. Next slide, please. The apartment is located on the second floor of the building on the left. It will be able to sleep up to eight people with three bedrooms, as well as a futon. The picture on the right is the view out over the RV park and the Crescent City Harbor from the apartment. On the ground floor of the same building are the restrooms that are in need of renovation and updating to meet accessibility standards. The restrooms are included in the project because they will provide additional capacity to the cabins and also allow visitors with less expensive RVs to stay at the RV park. Some of the smaller ones do not include restrooms. It's also possible to tent camp at the RV park. Next slide, please. Thank you for your consideration of this project. This picture shows a view of Elk Creek visible from the proposed location of the cabins. I'm now available to answer any questions that you have, and I also want to mention that Bridget Lacey, the Grants and Economic Development Coordinator from the City of Crescent City, is here, and on Zoom are Blake Inscore, the Mayor of Crescent City, and Eric Weir, the City Administrator.
Are there any questions, comments? Any comments or questions from the public?
We have no public comments.
Brian? This is probably a silly question, but it's the low-cost accommodations, the two that are going to be moved in, they're right next to a creek. Is there any issue with flooding in that area, or?
Bridget, maybe you can.
Is that why they're on wheels, so that if it happens, you can move them, or?
We did run this past our planning director, and he didn't seem to think that there would be an issue. We will still have to get coastal development permit. CEQA's in process, but it was something that was reviewed by our staff and didn't seem to be a problem.
Okay.
And Bridget, I can add just real quick to that, and anyone else answer the question but for the commission. So Eric Weir, city manager, thank you guys so much for considering this item. There are firm maps in that location, which does indicate the 100-year floodplain of the Elk Creek estuary in that area, and these cabins would be located outside of that. So not all of the RV park is within that. So there is some space, not exactly where they're shown on the map, but just sort of up from that as we reviewed those maps.
Okay.
Great.
Brian,
do you want to move approval?
Sure, move approval.
Item
happy
seven.
To second.
And Ms. Hart seconds. Paul, will you call the roll? This is on item seven.
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grautich?
Aye.
Mr. Hallacy?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Yes.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item seven is approved.
Thank you, Peter. All right, we'll go on. We'll go on now to item eight, which is the 3,654-acre Richmond Ranch. And that will be presented by Laura Cholodinko. Go ahead, Laura.
Good morning, Chair Bosco, board members. Staff is recommending authorization to disperse $1,500,000 to the Santa Clara Valley Habitat Agency to acquire and permanently protect 1,218 acres of the Richmond Ranch in Santa Clara County. Next slide. The ranch is located in the eastern portion of the county. It's just south of urban and suburban areas in the city of San Jose. Next slide. This is a picture taken from the ranch, and you can see these urban areas in the background. Next slide. The entire Richmond Ranch is just over 3,600 acres. The Conservation Fund purchased the ranch from real estate developers in a bargain sale for $16 million in January of 2024. And since then, almost 1,500 acres of the ranch have been sold to Santa Clara County Parks, almost 950 acres sold to the Habitat Agency. And so selling the remaining 1,218 acres to the Habitat Agency will complete conservation of the entire ranch. Next slide. The property supports a diversity of habitats, including annual grasslands and Coates live oak forest. On the bottom left is a picture of rare serpentine bunch grass that's found on the property. There's also ponds and other wetland features. The property also supports populations of several threatened and endangered species, including the bay checker spot butterfly and California red-legged frog. The picture on the right is of the Santa Clara Dudleya. It's a little hard to see. It's peeking out in the middle of those rocks. It's a rare plant that's also found on the property. Next slide. The property is shown in pink and the larger ranch shown in yellow. And it's the ranch is part of a large and connected area of connected protected lands that includes Henrico State Park and county parks and other areas of conserved open space that you can see in the light and dark green. Next slide. This figure shows the ranch. This time it's in red hatch mark, and the larger ranch is again in yellow. The color polygons indicate populations of endangered species that are found on the ranch, and the gray area indicates that most of the property in the ranch has been designated by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife as having high habitat connectivity value and serves as an important wildlife corridor. So species like mountain lions and bobcats and American badger are known from the area and expected to use the property to move throughout the region. Next slide. After acquisition is complete, the Habitat Agency will work with Santa Clara County Parks and Rec to develop a plan for public access, which will include development of an approximately half mile segment of the Bay Area Ridge Trail. This is a picture of a potential location for the trail and where there will be beautiful views of surrounding natural and urban landscapes. Next slide. The Habitat Agency recently reached out to eight tribal groups, inviting them to a site meeting so the agency can better understand the cultural significance of the property and assess interest of tribal groups in partnering on stewardship projects and having access to the property for cultural uses. Acquisition of the property will also allow the Habitat Agency to manage existing resources on the property and to implement restoration and enhancement actions. For example, agency staff may remove or retrofit existing fencing to facilitate wildlife movement. They'll also work to control invasive plants on the property. The picture on the right is a hill slope with some patches of invasive artichoke thistle, and agency staff are already developing plans for the control of this species. Next slide. Primary management tool will continue to be cattle grazing. Managed grazing contributes to the local economy, and it reduces buildup of vegetation that can lead to wildfires, and it also helps control the spread of invasive plants. Next slide. Thank you for your consideration. I have Edmund Sullivan, the executive director of the Habitat Agency, and I think Robin Cohn, also from the Habitat Agency, online, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Okay, are there any questions? It seems to me this is a pretty good bargain.
I know,
especially for us, $1.5 million for all of this. Great. All right, well then, do we have a motion that we approve item 8?
So moved.
Okay, Ms. Hart moves.
I'll second.
And who is that, Mars?
Yes.
Okay.
Mars, we still seconds. Need to ask for public comments.
Oh, okay, is there any public comment?
We have no public comments.
All right, Paul, that's what your job is. So now would you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 8 is approved.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, Laura. Well, we'll go on now to item 9. Virgilio Calce is going to present that. Virgilio, thank you.
Testing? Okay. Good morning, Chair Bosco, members of the board. Staff recommends that you authorize disbursement of $700,000 to the East Bay Regional Park District to undertake the Keller Beach Access Improvements Project, consisting of constructing public access improvements and amenities at the Keller Beach portion of Miller Knox Regional Shoreline in Contra Costa County, and adoption of findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. Conservancy funds are anticipated to come from a fiscal year 2023-24 general fund appropriation. Next slide, please. The approximately 1.3-acre Keller Beach project site is located in the Miller Knox Regional Shoreline, a 19-acre park managed and owned by the East Bay Regional Park District that sits at the edge of San Francisco Bay in the city of Richmond, as shown on this slide. According to the statewide parks program community fact finder, the project site is approximately a mile away from some of the Richmond's most underserved communities, making the park an essential amenity for their recreational needs. Next slide, please. The Shoreline Park contains a variety of recreational and natural resources, including a 1.1-mile stretch of Bay Shoreline, segments of the San Francisco Bay Trail, a San Francisco Bay Area Water Trail kayak launch site, picnic areas, and two publicly accessible beaches, one of which is Keller Beach, seen in the picture on the right. The photo on the left shows an overall view of the park, which conveys the scenic qualities. Next slide, please. The Keller Beach site includes picnic tables, outdoor grills, restrooms, an outdoor shower, horseshoe pits, and landscaping, all arranged on terraces overlooking the bay. Unfortunately, these facilities are in a state of disrepair. From these photos alone, one can see a weathered picnic bench, water fountain, and restrooms in need of updating, cracked pavement, and all assorted other issues that are in need of repair. These facilities were designed to be fully compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act, so access is further compromised. Next slide, please. The proposed project will consist of public amenity upgrades to address the deteriorating state of existing facilities and to provide safe beach access for all visitors. Project activities include creating a new accessible path from the terraced amenities to the beach. And you can see that in the sort of switchback path that you see in the conceptual photo. Replacing or upgrading existing grills, picnic tables, benches, restrooms, outdoor shower, water fountain, interpretive panels, retaining walls, and seat walls. And finally, installing a non-slip wheelchair mat. Next slide. The Keller Beach Access Improvements Project is an important project that provides much needed updates to a key community resource. It addresses concerns raised through community engagement, and the amenities updated through this project will be ADA compliant, providing health and safe beach access for all ages and disabilities and abilities. Site improvements will also be constructed to be sustainable over the project lifespan, designed for resilience to severe storm events, including king tides. Next slide. That concludes my presentation. We have Katie Hornbeck, Grants Manager, and Eva Rose Levitt, Landscape Architect, both from the East Bay Regional Park District. And we're all here to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments about item 9? Are there any from the public?
We have no public comments.
All right. Michelle, do you want to move approval of item 9?
So moved.
Okay. Ms. Hart, second.
Happy to second.
Okay. Paul, will you please call the roll? Mm-hmm.
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 9 is approved.
Thank you, Virgilio.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll move on to item 10, the Lower College of Marin Corta Madera Creek Habitat Restoration Project. And to do that is Shalini Kanan.
Hello. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. Staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $2,213,270, including $555,000 of grant funds from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to Marin County Flood Control and Water Conservation District to implement the Lower College of Marin Corta Madera Creek Habitat Restoration Project, which consists of partial removal of a section of concrete channel, restoration of 1.44 acres of tidal wetland, transition zone, and upland habitats, and enhancement of public access in and along Lower Corta Madera Creek in the unincorporated area of Kentfield in Marin County. Staff also recommends adoption of findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. Next slide, please. The project will restore a downstream 450-foot reach of Corta Madera Creek, where the creek's riverine flows meet tidal flows adjacent to College of Marin, marked with red circles on both of the maps here. This section of creek is contained in concrete channel constructed in the late 60s by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to address flooding in a way that was very common at the time, but that we now know can cause many unintended consequences. Channelizing the creek destroyed wetland and riparian habitat for its entire length, cut off the creek from natural processes, obstructed fish passage, and degraded water quality. The channel no longer provides flood risk reduction for much of its length. The project is the furthest downstream reach of a larger Corte Madera Creek flood risk management project, which is shown in the map on the right, the entire pink line there, which is led by the Flood Control District also. And this project is to maintain and update the concrete channel, more flood control type improvements to contain greater flows and also to support salmonid fish passage. This upstream work will be completed with other funds and is about 0.87 miles. Next slide, please. Restoration possibilities for Corte Madera Creek are constrained by nearby development and buried utilities, which is a common situation in the urbanized region of the Bay Area. The project will demonstrate the feasibility and benefit of partial concrete removal, which keeps buried utilities protected while saving costs and still providing full restoration benefits. The image on the left shows the current conditions where the concrete channel suddenly ends and abruptly widens into an over-widened earthen channel. Here, the water flow velocity drops quickly, causing large amounts of sediment to accumulate past the concrete channel, and then this sediment restricts flow and more and future sediment movement. Both sides of the concrete channel are lined with riprap, and the uplands have mostly non-native vegetation. Although the creek is designated critical habitat for Central California coast steelhead and coho salmon, there's poor wildlife and aquatic habitat in the channel. The image on the right is a rendering of what the completed project will look like after construction. The project will lower the 450-foot concrete wall on the left bank and lower the downstream 150 feet on the right bank. The channel bottom and the lower parts of the sidewalls that are currently buried in sediment will stay buried in sediment and left as is. And since the sediment is covering the bottom section of concrete, it can keep providing habitat for the organisms that live in the mud. This partial concrete channel removal will restore natural creek processes, which will be further enhanced by constructing upland swales and a detention basin to improve water quality and increase connectivity between stream flows and groundwater. The project will also enhance public access to the creek by improving views, removing unaesthetic fencing and concrete, and installing a retaining wall that creates space for the park on the right bank of the creek, which the park will be built in the future by Marin County Parks. Next slide, please. This figure shows the various habitats that the project will establish by replacing the non-native vegetation with native vegetation. It will create low marsh, high marsh, transition zone, and upland habitats. This design will allow habitat to transition upwards with sea level rise, ensuring that fish and wildlife, including ridgeway rail and spawning salmonids, will have habitat into the future. The Friends of Corte Madera Creek Watershed will take the lead on salvaging plants from the site prior to construction, growing native plants, and revegetating the site after construction. Friends will hire and manage Conservation Corps North Bay for several weeks to do the reveg work and will also monitor the project for 2 years after construction. Friends is also collaborating with the neighboring College of Marin so that the newly restored ecological feature can be used as an outdoor classroom where students and faculty from College of Marin and other schools can study creek restoration and natural ecosystems. Many College of Marin students come from systemically excluded communities, and Friends and their partners at the college plan to develop an environmental curriculum and monitoring program for students. Next slide. Thank you. With that, Joanna Dixon from Marin County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and Sandy Goldman from Friends of Corte Madera Creek Watershed are on Zoom. Sandy will make a quick comment, and then both are available to help answer any questions.
Okay.
Sandy, go ahead.
It has long been a dream of the community to remove the concrete channel confining Corte Madera Creek in portions of Kent Field and Ross. Although complete removal is not likely, some major improvements are feasible. In 2017, Friends of Corte Madera Creek Watershed hired a geomorphologist engineer to prepare a conceptual plan for lowering the concrete wall along the right side and laying back the bank in the downstream half of the concrete encased creek. We use that conceptual plan to expand the base of support beyond the flood control district, most importantly from the major landowner, the College of Marin. We also reached out to nearby residents and displayed the plans along the heavily used Route 20, a multi-use path along the left bank of the creek that connects the Larkspur Ferry Terminal to communities throughout the Ross Valley. The project was very well received with two requests. The first was to maintain public access on the right bank of the creek, where an informal dirt path had been developed. And the second request was to replace any trees that will be removed. The project does both, with improvements made to the relocated path on the right bank and the replacement of invasive acacias by native trees. This is truly a community project. With the College of Marin on board, we began applying for grants to design the project. That milestone was reached and all the permits acquired. The Flood Control District, with our support, continued the quest for construction funds. And with this award, construction can proceed. The entire community thanks you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any comments from the board? Any other public comments?
We have no public comments. Okay.
You know, the Friends of Court of Madera Creek have gone on for a long time and have done a terrific job with that creek. I commend you very much in the Flood Control District as well. All right, is there a motion that we approve item 10? Michelle, do you want to move that?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Right. Okay, Ms. Hart seconds. Paul, will you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hollisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 10 is approved.
Thank you, Shalini.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll now go on to the Central Coast and item 11, and Lexi Carruthers will present that. Lexi.
Awesome. Good morning, Chairman Bosco and members of the board. My name is Lexi Carruthers, and today I will be presenting the Greyhound Rock Low-Cost Overnight Accommodations Project. Staff is recommending the Conservancy authorize an $865,000 grant to the County of Santa Cruz. This funding would support planning for a new cabin campground and related amenities at Greyhound Rock County Park in Santa Cruz County. Next slide, please. Greyhound Rock is located on the northern coast of Santa Cruz County, and it's about 15 miles north of the city of Santa Cruz. The park encompasses about 70 acres of coastal bluff top and offers stunning ocean views and beach access. The park is named after its signature feature, Greyhound Rock, which is a sea stack composed of Santa Cruz mudstone, and it's in the foreground of the photo on the right. Next slide, please. Currently, the park's amenities are concentrated at the southern end of the property, which is circled on the map, and it includes two paved parking lots, a restroom, several scenic viewpoints, picnic areas, and a pathway down to the beach. The northern section of the site is mainly unused and currently inaccessible to the public. The northern area is where the county is proposing a new cabin campground to be located. On the next slide, you'll see additional photos of the area. Next slide. The proposed new cabin campground area is about 8 acres on a flat bluff top. This area has a separate entrance from Highway 1 and has two abandoned structures, which may be repurposed if feasible for campground or environmental educational facilities. The proposed project will allow county parks to plan for new low-cost cabin campground at this site. Camping cabins are rustic, unfurnished cabins for campers, and they typically provide more comfort than traditional tent camping. The site is expected to accommodate approximately 8 to 15 camping cabins, and the plan will be developed with that. Next slide, please. With the proposed project, county parks will undertake tasks to advance planning for the new campground, and this includes conducting technical and feasibility studies, developing designs, environmental review documents, and permit applications, and engaging with the community and local tribes. On this slide are high-level concepts for the potential campground, but the actual siting and designs will be determined during planning. The project will include plans for associated amenities at the campground, including a new communal restroom, a half mile of pedestrian pathways, restoration of coastal bluff habitat, and interpretive signage. Next slide, please. The county plans to primarily offer the cabins to underserved youth and communities through programming in partnership with local nonprofits and school districts, thus enhancing equitable coastal access. When not reserved for these programs, the cabins would be available to the general public through reservation system. The project site is currently owned by California Department of Fish and Wildlife, but has been managed by the county since the 1960s. In June of this year, the county entered into a MOU with the Department of Fish and Wildlife to acquire the property. The timeline for the transfer is expected to take approximately 2 years, which is also how long the planning process for the campground is expected to take. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. Rob Tidmore of County Parks is online, and we are both happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Lexi. Are there any questions, Ms. Hart?
Yeah, I was just curious about the design. I might have missed it, but how many cabins there will be? And I know the design might be in the future, but I was hoping maybe County Parks could talk a little bit about if they're planning to design something that integrates into the environment there. It's such a prominent coastal, beautiful, really beautiful area.
Yeah, so it's expected to be about 8 to 15 cabins, and okay. So that will be part of the planning process. We'll be figuring out exactly how many, and it's expected that they'll be prefabricated structures. If there's anything else you want to add on that.
Yeah, I can just add that these are most likely going to be used based on a design competition that was run through state parks and in collaboration with Cal Poly students, so that these prefabricated cabins are rustic, low impact, similar to one of the earlier projects there that brought in on a trailer with wheels, so they're easy to deliver to the site. And as you could see from some of those photos, while it's a magnificent bluff top location, there are a number of invasive species on the site, and part of the project would include restoration of the bluff top habitat and planting with native species. And our intent is to really integrate those cabins into the environment and enhance them with native plantings around them so that they really become part of the landscape and enhance the scenic ability up there.
Yeah, thanks so much. That's the design that came out of Park Forward that you're talking about, that Cal Poly collaboration, and those cabins are really cool. So there's a bunch of them in Sonoma County at Spring Lake. I don't know if you've seen them. You might want to take a trip up there and check it out. And they all have, besides having the cabins, they have little areas for camping too next to them, so that there's overflow for tents. Are you thinking about doing that?
Potentially, yeah. And thank you for that. The reference to Spring Lake, we'll definitely check that out. I would say that we're open to that right now. We need to go through the planning process to figure out, what is an appropriate number of people and appropriate number of cabins to accommodate on the site. But that's something that we'll be looking into as we move forward.
Great, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Oh, Kara, go ahead, please.
Greetings, everyone. Thank you for a great presentation. This is in Santa Cruz County, and on behalf of Senator Laird, he's in support of this project. It has a lot of wonderful aspects that were well described, and also it's just taken a whole lot of work and coordination to get us to this point, and I just want to thank the county for their patience and their ability to work with state and federal agencies. So hope that it passes, and I think this will be really wonderful for school groups and others who get to enjoy the experience. So thank you all.
Thank you, Kara. It certainly shows that in providing for the lower cost accommodations, we're not compromising the beauty of the surroundings. This looks like one of the nicest places probably on the coast, which is good. All right. Are there any other public comments?
We have no public comments.
Then do I hear a motion that we accept this? Ms. Hart, do you want?
I'm happy to make the motion.
All right.
I'll second it.
And Mr. Hallisey seconds. Paul, please call the roll.
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 11 is approved.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Lexi. Okay, we'll now go on to item 12, which is $6,600,000 to the San Diego Unified Port District, and that will be presented by Kellen Warner. Kellen?
Hello. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. Staff recommends getting used to my face, as I'm going to be here for the entirety of the South Coast portion of the agenda today. So first off, staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $6,600,000 to the San Diego Unified Port District to undertake the San Diego Harbor Park Project Phase 1A and adoption of the findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. This project consists of the construction of the 25-acre Harbor Park, including improvements to the beach, construction of a boat launch, and many other recreational amenities. Harbor Park will expand and replace Bayside Park on the Chula Vista Bayfront in San Diego County. Next slide, please. Chula Vista is the second largest city in San Diego County, and the communities nearest to and most directly served by this proposed project are extremely vulnerable to sea level rise based on NOAA's Social Vulnerability Index and have been historically deprived of access to the coast, opportunities to recreate outside, and engagement with nature. With limited access to the coast and limited parks, much of Chula Vista doesn't meet the city's current requirement for 3 acres of parkland per 1,000 persons, and the community is classified as disadvantaged via Cal EnviroScreen 4.0. Next slide, please. The Chula Vista Bayfront Master Plan, jointly prepared by the San Diego Port District and the City of Chula Vista, plans for the redevelopment of over 500 acres of land fronting San Diego Bay in Chula Vista and has been in development for over 20 years. And community engagement was integrated into the project since the beginning. The master plan promises new opportunities for free recreation for residents and visitors at the water's edge of San Diego Bay. Next slide, please. The Harbor Park project is a component of the master plan and will add much needed park space by nearly doubling the size of the existing Bayside Park, improving existing amenities, and creating new recreational opportunities and amenities. Next slide, please. To create a more resilient shoreline, the project will excavate the existing beach footprint and eroding shoreline, remove severely eroded beachfront, and, in turn, enlarge and improve beach. To create a perched beach above the existing sandy mudflat, the project will construct an intertidal zone, dry zone, and an upper zone. The perched beach will consist of finer sand that will support public use and recreational opportunities. The project will create a cobble and coarse sand layer in the intertidal zone, and these beach improvements will reduce littoral drift and nourishment demands. In addition, the project will use existing riprap for the terraced headlands, providing a structured enclosure at each end of the beach to reduce erosion and improve sand retention. Next slide, please. Okay, I went crazy with the animations here, so go ahead and click forward 8. Good, yeah, keep going. I'll note them as we go, so I don't have to keep telling you to go. Oh, there we go, okay. So San Diego Harbor Park Phase 1A includes the construction of many other components in addition to the beach improvements, including the creation of a 0.3-acre pocket marsh with native sand marsh species to provide habitat and interpretive and environmental education opportunities. That's that yellow star, I think. Yeah, yellow star. Realigning a portion of the waterfront promenade to support public access to the coast. That's that yellow squiggle. Construction of a new ADA-accessible boat ramp for water recreation, such as kayaks and paddle boards, that's the orange star. Construction of new pedestrian pathways to improve circulation within the park and bike improvements, the yellow oval.
construction of additional public parking, the pink star, and improvements, construction of lawn areas near the beach, that's a green oval, and improvements to address sea level rise with final elevation of 13.5 feet at the shoreline, with the exception of the beach. And that's that kind of rust-colored squiggle around the project site. Next slide, please. So here's the port's vision of the new Harbor Park area. Conservancy funding for this project is anticipated to come from the appropriation to the Conservancy of the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund to address urgent sea level rise, adaptation, and coastal resilience needs using nature-based solutions. The port is facing urgent threats from sea level rise and is finding nature-based solutions to help preserve public access and shoreline habitats. As a result of this project, there will be increased recreational opportunities for underserved communities and people with disabilities, fewer hurdles to accessing the beach, and better shoreline protection to support community resilience. Next slide, please. Thank you. Joining us today from the port are Amy Heim, Laura Wagner, and Amy Gerritsen. They are online and available for questions, and so am I.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I just had one comment. I just wanted to point out that this is a $19.6 million project, and the Conservancy is only contributing 6.6. So that's great. Just wanted to point that out. I know our friends at Finance are very happy about that, too. So.
Another example of
If I may.
No, go ahead, please.
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead. I have a whole lot of laudatory comments around this, and I think a very, I'll just go ahead. So yes, I'm very excited to see this kind of project go forward. You know, as a longtime resident of the South Bay area, I can tell you that this is the sort of thing that we need more of. You know, it is a problem that has been little by little being solved, the access to nature in the parks, but I'm very, very excited to see this. And I will say that I am looking forward to seeing more of Chula Vista's famous 500-pound turtle wrinklebutt, who makes her home around there. And hopefully this gives a lot more kindergartners who love to hear about her right there. And this is their first access to nature opportunities to interact. So I'm hoping this goes forward. It's very exciting.
Well, Marce, I imagine you would like to move this.
Very much. Okay. Yes.
Good.
I would love to move this.
Ms. Sterling, do you want to second it?
Delighted.
Okay, and then we'll go on. Are there any public comments?
We have no public comments.
No. Well, congratulations. This looks like a beautiful project.
Yay. I mean, I'm sure the port is thrilled too.
Good, good. Okay, Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perot?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grownich?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 12 is approved.
Okay, good. Well, Kellen, you're on next as well, right?
Yeah, this is my new home. Okay.
Didn't you get enough money with $6.5 million?
No, the South Coast needs more.
All right.
Okay, completely agree.
Love having an advocate. Okay, ahoy, Chair Bosco and Conservancy Board. Staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $3,457,000. And dollars? That number is so specific every time it gets me. $3,457,000 to the Maritime Museum Association of San Diego to replace two mooring dolphins and augment an existing conservancy grant to prepare designs and engineering, environmental compliance documents, and permit applications for the Maritime Museum of San Diego entry building in San Diego County. Next slide, please. The Maritime Museum of San Diego is located at the Star of India Wharf on the San Diego Bayfront. The museum is an integral part of the aesthetic of the Embarcadero, reflecting the region's genesis as inextricably linked to the ocean and providing a striking visual reminder that,
For much of modern human history, ships provided the sole means of collective long-distance transportation. Next slide, please. Apart from three ticket kiosks, signage, and a few maritime artifacts on the walkway adjacent to the bay, the museum's footprint exists in the bay waters. The museum enjoys a worldwide reputation for excellence in restoring, maintaining, and operating historic vessels. In 2023, the museum welcomed 1,740 visitors, including 15,000 students who learned about the history and importance of the museum's vessels. However, one of the problems that the museum faces is the fact that it's hard to see. Many people look at the museum, see what appears to be a random group of vessels, and move along after taking a couple of pictures. Currently, the museum has no single unified point of entry. Therefore, the museum is not immediately recognized as the cultural and historical resource that it is. Next slide, please. The museum consists of a number of historic ships and replicas, including the Star of India, a massive iron-hulled ship from the 1860s, the Berkeley, the Californian, the Surprise, the San Salvador, and others. Each ship features galleries and exhibits relating to the maritime history, California history, and local culture. The museum's footprint on the bay waters also includes the floating docks, walkways, and barges that provide access to the ships. Next slide, please. Oh, wait. Yeah, you're right. To address the problem, the museum is redesigning its entrance areas and waterside exhibits. The entrance redesign project will include construction of an entry building to the Embarcadero on the Embarcadero to incorporate a visitor welcome area, a theater and meeting space, exhibit space, restrooms, a cafe, and administrative offices. Where currently visitors see a collection of ships, the proposed building will serve as the entry point to the museum complex that is immediately recognizable as an institutional destination. The redesign project also includes waterside updates to the museum that will include a more dispersed series of walkways, updating infrastructure on the water, and repositioning the vessels to make them more visible and assist the museum in telling a historically coherent story. Next slide, please. The recommended grant will augment the Conservancy's previous grant to the museum for this project. As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, project work was significantly delayed, and project costs have increased since the museum received the Conservancy's original grant in 2018. This augmentation will allow for the completion of the environmental review process, permit applications, and 90% design and engineering. Next slide, please. This grant will also fund the replacement of two mooring dolphins. Mooring dolphins are used to assist in mooring and securing a ship to a pier or other secure structures via a rope. These two mooring dolphins have been used longer than expected and are past their useful life. Replacing these mooring dolphins is part of regular museum upkeep, but the replaced dolphins will remain viable after the anticipated entry building construction and reconfiguring of the museum's vessels. Next slide, please. Thank you. The Executive Director of the Maritime Museum of San Diego, Ray Ashley, is here and would like to make a statement to the board.
Good morning, everybody. Chairman Bosco, members of the Coastal Conservancy Board and staff. Thank you for giving me the chance to speak. Thank you for that great presentation, by the way. And this just gives me the opportunity to thank the Conservancy for a long partnership that we've had over several years, including the rehabilitation of the state's tall ship, the Californian, and assisting us with the construction of the Galleon San Salvador. Both of those ships have sailed tens of thousands of miles to San Salvador since we launched her, sailed 7,000 miles along the California coast, and hundreds of thousands of people have walked her decks and tried to imagine what it would have been like sailing such a ship in the 16th century when Europeans first arrived here and came into first contact with the indigenous peoples. During the course of all of those years and projects, it's been an opportunity to work with a number of your great staff members, and that gives me one more chance also to thank Mary Small back there for her participation in some of those projects, and also just to emphasize that the project that we have ahead of us is kind of the culmination of many years of trying to improve our museum, extend its outreach, provide enhanced public access, and have those ships really be the ambassadors for California and its entire maritime story to members of the public throughout the state. So again, be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Ms. Hart?
If I could ask you, it just seems like a fantastic project, and I'm totally supportive. Just coming from the Coastal Commission perspective, I'm curious about the impact on open water views, because it just on the photo
Sure. Yeah.
Will there be ability to see beyond or through that building, or how would open
That's a really good question, and that actually has come up in several times over the course of the last couple of years as we've talked about the design of the building with Coastal Commission staff. And they've been really productive conversations with great suggestions, and the building that has emerged as a result of that is a reflection of those discussions. The building itself is transparent, so you see right through it to the bay beyond. And in fact, the actual ability to see the bay will be a little bit more after this than it is now. The Star of India is right up next to the Embarcadero, so being a ship made out of iron, you can't really see through that so well. Being placed out a little bit further into the bay, you can see much more of the ship. It's more attractive looking, and also you're blocking less of that overall view out into the bay as well. So
that's fantastic. I figured that, given all the support for it, that was the case, but so great to hear it, and thank you for that.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments?
Yes, I definitely have a comment. So this is very exciting to see. All I can say is that I know that a bunch of sixth graders that I, if I'm correct, fifth and sixth graders are the ones that do the most visits there. Think this is the coolest thing ever, those visits. I hear this a lot from folks. And man, that is tall praise, okay? So 11, 12-year-olds keep talking about how cool this is. It's tall, tall praise. I also want to point out that across the street, there is, not across the street, but very nearby, there's a splash pad where a lot of families are. So it's very exciting to see something that's a little bit more, easier to find, because there's a lot of families that make a day out of that, and small children, et cetera. So it'll be very cool to kind of give it more visibility to have that integration with the facilities across the street.
So would you like to move item 13?
I would love to move item 13. Thanks.
And Ms. Sterling, do you want to second it?
Okay. We
have a long history with this project, and I can't emphasize enough how enjoyable it is to visit these ships, and how children, it's very different than any other kind of thing you can bring children or grandchildren to. And so much a part of history. And so thank you for your good work. And you've been here before. So.
I have, yes.
It's always been a success. All right. Are there any public comments?
We have no public comments.
All right. It's been moved and seconded then that we approve item 13. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perot?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hollacy?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 13 is approved.
Okay, thank you. Helen, you're back again, aren't you?
Can't get rid of me.
Yeah, and Chair Bosco, I would recommend that after this presentation, by Kellen, we take a lunch break because the lunches are here, and then we could come back and
that's one of the
wildfire.
That's one of the orders that you've issued that I think we can all accept.
Lunch.
All right, go ahead, Kellen.
All right, hello still, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. Last one for me, but it's another good one. Staff recommends authorization to disperse $418,784 to three nonprofit organizations for three community-based wetland and stream restoration projects on approximately 14 acres in Los Angeles and Orange counties as part of the 2024 Community Wetland Restoration Grant Program, which will hereafter be referred to CWRGP to save time. Next slide, please. The CWRGP is a program of the Southern California Wetlands Recovery Project. The Wetlands Recovery Project consists of the 18 state and federal agencies, and we coordinate with local partners carrying out wetland restoration projects throughout the region. Next slide, please. The purposes of the CWRGP are to further wetland recovery goals in Southern California, build local capacity to plan and implement wetland restoration projects, promote community involvement in wetland restoration activities, and foster education about wetland ecosystems. The CWRGP seeks to engage and benefit people and communities that include lower-income people, people with disabilities, Black, Indigenous, people of color, or BIPOC, immigrant communities, and other historically marginalized communities. Next slide, please. Since 2021, the CWRGP has funded over 170 projects in Southern California, distributing $4 million for community-based project implementation. Each year, the WRP, or Wetlands Recovery Project, solicits CWRGP proposals from nonprofit organizations, universities, tribes, and agencies eligible to apply. This year, the proposals were reviewed by a committee that included staff from the Conservancy, the Wildlife Conservation Board, the San Gabriel and Lower Los Angeles Rivers and Mountains Conservancy, the California Coastal Commission, and CDFW, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So let's talk about the three projects. Next slide, please. Two of the CWRGP projects focus on work at the LA River. The LA River watershed covers over 800 square miles of the most densely populated, ethnically and socioeconomically diverse region in the United States. Close to 100% of the original wetlands and 90 to 95% of in-stream riparian habitat within the watershed have been lost due to urbanization and channelization. Of equal concern is the disparity of access and use of open space and natural areas by BIPOC communities. Next slide, please. The first project at the LA River is the Friends of the Los Angeles Rivers Scaling Community-Based Efforts Project, which will be funded by RMC funds through the Conservancy. By the Rivers and Mountains Conservancy funds through the Conservancy. This project will engage community members living near the Los Angeles River by providing river stewardship opportunities through community education, habitat restoration, and cleanup events. Next slide, please. Perfect. This project will mobilize hundreds of volunteers to restore 3 to 5 acres of natural mixed riparian habitats in the Sepulveda Basin Wildlife Reserve, where monthly restoration work will consist of non-native plant removal. Next slide. Thank you. Implementation of the annual Great LA River Cleanup along the middle and lower LA River, which mobilizes tens of thousands of volunteers every year and has removed 1.6 million pounds of trash and debris since beginning in 1989. Next slide, please. And this project also includes the selection and restoration of one or two additional sites, totaling approximately 3 acres of habitat along the lower LA River corridor. The Lower LA River Corridor project sites will be located, depending on executive officer confirmation, along the soft bottom stretches of the LA River and will be selected with community engagement and the expertise of a field biologist. Staff will make California Environmental Quality Act findings for the selection of the Lower LA River restoration sites, and implementation work at the site will not commence until the Conservancy's executive officer has given written confirmation that that site is exempt from CEQA. Next slide, please. The second LA River project is Trout Unlimited's Lower Los Angeles River Pollinator Habitat Restoration Project, funded by the Rivers and Mountains Conservancy through the Conservancy. This project will provide bilingual coastal wetland and upland to pollinator habitat education and mentorship in local schools in Paramount and hands-on community-led restoration implementation events to plant drought-tolerant native pollinator plants on 6 acres within Ralph C. Dills Park in Paramount, which is located in LA County. Next slide, please. This project will build local grant implementation capacity by supporting bilingual watershed education led by Trout Unlimited's local partner, the Latinas Art Foundation. And Latinas Art Foundation will add a specialized curriculum to their bilingual after-school programming to foster wetland awareness, where students will learn how to plant milkweed, its community and ecological benefits, and pollinator-focused community-inspired art lessons. The hands-on piece of the project will occur during local restoration events called Milkweed Days at Ralph C. Dills Park, which is pictured on the screen. The restoration will integrate narrow-leaf milkweed and other native drought-tolerant pollinator species planting to bolster monarch butterfly habitat along the LA River migration corridor. Next slide, please. Okay, now we're going to Orange County for the Newport Bay Conservancy's Lower Constellation Coastal Sage. We've got to shorten these names, y'all. The Newport Bay Conservancy's Lower Constellation Coastal Sage Scrub and High Marsh Restoration Project, which will be funded by the Wildlife Conservation Board through the Conservancy. This project will restore 1.7 acres of degraded coastal sage scrub and wetland habitat through the Upper Newport Bay Ecological Preserve.
This project site is dominated by non-native species and has a history of fragmentation created by unauthorized trails, which has adversely affected the native biodiversity and populations of terrestrial and intertidal wildlife. This project will restore wetlands and transitional habitat that will promote biodiversity, resilience to sea level rise, support critical habitat for endangered species, and offer educational benefits to the public. Next slide, please. The project area naturally lends itself to interpretation and educational opportunities due to its closeness to the water's edge. The grantee will install interpretive signage to educate the public about the endangered species that occur in the area, the importance of restoration work, and native plant species. The project will also focus on educational engagement opportunities with the community. Next slide, please. Or it's a picture. Newport Bay Conservancy will host community restoration events as well as school groups to increase stewardship and involve them in restoration. Students and volunteers will assist in collecting native seeds from the bay, growing native plants from seed, removing invasive species, and installing and maintaining native plants within the restoration area. This project also funds two interns to lead events and educate volunteers. Next slide, please. Thank you for your consideration of funding these projects. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. We are joined online by a wonderful gaggle of project proponents. They are Jason Slider and Kristen Brown from Fullar, Robert Blankenship from Chow Unlimited, and Dalani Leon from Latina's Art Foundation. She might be able to join. And Heather Cieslak from the Newport Bay Conservancy.
All right, thank you, Kellen. Are there any comments, questions?
Just that it sounds really exciting.
Are there any public comments?
We have no public comments.
All right. Do I have a motion that we approve item 14?
We have Heather. Heather, go ahead.
Go ahead, Heather.
Thanks. Sorry about that. I needed to unmute myself. I just wanted to thank Chair Bosco and all the rest of the Conservancy members. I know you've been big supporters down in Orange County for Big Canyon, which is a way bigger project with lots of construction and heavy lifting. But we love this kind of project because it gets down to doing what we love to do and engaging the public and communities and students and interns to then teach others about coastal resilience and projects like this. So we're happy to work, a flight away from Big Canyon on the other side of the bay and work on this little project and engage more community members rather than large scale consultants and contractors. So we're happy to do it. And thank you guys for this opportunity.
Thank you for your work too. All right, Michelle, do you want to move approval of item 14?
So moved.
Carol?
Second.
All right, any other public comments? Not, Paul, please call the roll.
Okay. Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Pearl?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 14 is approved.
All right, thank you, Kellen. Good job. All right, why don't we take a lunch break to, let's say, 12:45? And then we'll start up again on item 15. Great job. Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order again. Welcome, everyone. Hope you had a nice lunch. And we're now on item 15, which will be presented by Costula Balianos. Did I get that right? Oh, good.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Good.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bosco, members of the board. I am excited to be presenting agenda item 15, East Bay Regional Park District's Wildfire Resilience Project. If you could pull up the slides, please. Staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $2,075,000 to East Bay Regional Park District to conduct vegetation treatments to reduce fuels across an estimated 130 acres in Tilden Regional Park, Anthony Chabot Regional Park,
Carquinez Strait Regional Shoreline and develop an approximately 34-acre shaded field break along the southern border of Lake Chabot Regional Park. Purchase vegetation management equipment, as well as adopt the findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. Next slide, please. The proposed project will reduce the risk of catastrophic fires along the wildland borders of the East Bay while maintaining and enhancing ecological values for plant and wildlife habitat. This project is part of the Park District's regional approach to wildfire prevention and resilience. Locations of the project's four components are shown here in this regional map. As mentioned previously, they include Tilden, Anthony Chabot, Lake Chabot, and Carquinez Strait Regional Parks. Next slide, please. In Tilden, the treatments will take place across 43 acres in two separate areas of the Tilden Nature Area. The eucalyptus in the treatment areas is quite dense, as illustrated by the photo on the left. The project will implement fuel reductions by various means, including goat grazing, mowing, mastication, and chipping, as well as select thinning and pile burning. Treatments prioritize removal of ladder fuels to reduce the risk of crown fires and the ensuing embers, which can easily spread from tree crown to tree crown or from home to home. The yellow thatch polygons on the right image are the two treatment areas. As you can see in the image on the right, the homes are quite close to parkland. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Okay. In 2020, there should be one before that one.
There was one before.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Sorry about that. In 2020, the Park District's Fire Department identified large swaths of eucalyptus forests exhibiting poor health and stress. Drought conditions and overstock stands with densities reaching 1,000 stems per acre contributed to tree mortality and dieback. With a grant from the Coastal Conservancy, the Park District performed an 80-acre fuels treatment and biomass pilot project, thinning the area of overstocked eucalyptus forests and carbonizing the woody biomass generated from the treatment. Lessons learned from the pilot project were used to treat an additional 395 acres in Anthony Chabot Regional Park. The 80-acre pilot project area will be retreated primarily with herbicide, but also goat grazing and other techniques such as repeated cutting and stump grinding. Eucalyptus resprouting after removal poses a significant long-term cost, and reestablishment can create future fire hazards. The Park District will study the timing and methodology of the herbicide application and present those findings in an herbicide response study and report. Now, next slide. The scenic fire started on June 22, 2022, near the Bull Valley area of the Carquinez Strait Regional Shoreline, adjacent to the town of Crockett. The fire was driven by a west wind and quickly entered a dense stand of eucalyptus in the parkland. This transformed into a hazardous crown fire that nearly burned into homes in the town of Port Costa. Since the scenic fire, the Park District has removed damaged eucalyptus on an approximately 20-acre area and started to restore it. The Park District staff began to map native plant communities as they appeared after a century of fire suppression by the invasive eucalyptus. This includes several rare plant associations that have emerged, such as unusual wild rye hybrids, large stands of blue elderberry, and forb complexes. The Park District will remove an additional 5 acres of damaged eucalyptus and replant natives throughout the 25 acres. Next slide, please. In the Lake Chabot Regional Park, the Park District will develop an approximately 34-acre shaded fuel break known as the Ten Hills Shaded Fuel Break along the southern border of the park, adjacent to the community of Castro Valley. Activities include thinning the tree canopy to reduce horizontal continuity and remove ladder fuels so fires do not spread through the vegetation or up to the crown, as well as treat and monitor invasive species such as French broom, remove dead and dying trees, and graze areas where it is feasible to limit shrub encroachment. This project also includes the purchase of equipment that will be used to develop and maintain the 10 Hills Shaded Fuel Break and other Park District wildfire fuel reduction projects, increasing the Park District's capacity to do this work for themselves in the future. Next slide. This concludes my presentation. Park District staff and I are available to answer your questions.
Is there any question? I had one question. Oftentimes, these kind of deforestation projects require a substantial amount of herbicides. Do you get pushback from neighbors around there, especially when you have water nearby, as this does, these projects?
So the Park District, and I believe they are on the panel to be able to speak to this, but they work closely with the community to discuss with them the challenges of retreatment, which includes herbicide. The scenic fire actually occurred because in the 80s there was a fire, and the eucalyptus was very dense there because they had cut it down and it came back and resprouted very densely. And so the fire came into this very dense area and led to the damage that we're trying to address now.
Right, and so they use the herbicides to prevent
the resprouting.
Back again.
Yes, exactly.
I was just curious as what the neighbors...
I think it's an ongoing dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Katie Hornbeck is on from East Bay Parks if she wants to
chime in. Oh, okay, good.
Hi, can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Katie Hornbeck, Grants Manager with East Bay Regional Park District. I'm also joined by Patrick McIntyre, who's one of the fire captains within the fire department, and Kristen Van Dam, who works in our stewardship department. But I think really just a ditto to what Costula said. You know, we use it minimally and only to prevent the resprouting, and we're in environmental compliance as well. But to my knowledge, have not heard or received any kind of pushback with the use, just because of how minimal it is and that it's so specifically used for the resprouting.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? All right. Are there any public comments?
We have no public comments.
All right. Brian, would you like
move
to
approval?
Move approval? And
I'll second.
Was that Mars?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mars. All right. Go ahead and call the roll then, please.
Ms. Hart?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 15 is approved.
Okay, thank you, Costula.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on now to item 16, and Lily Allen will present this.
Good afternoon, Chair Bosco.
Was that Costula's first time?
No.
No?
I didn't think it was, but you were all applauding. And I did. Go ahead, Lily.
Good afternoon, Chair Bosco and members of the board. I'm Lily Allen, a project manager in the beautiful North Coast program. Staff recommends authorization to distribute up to $4 million to the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy to, firstly, implement forest health and wildfire resiliency activities in Tomales Bay State Park, a priority project in the Marin Regional Forest Health Strategy, second, implement wildfire resilience activities in Marin City, and last, engage the Fire Foundry Workforce Development Program in either or both project components, as well as adoption of findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. Next slide, please. This slide shows the location of the project's two wildfire resilience treatment components. First, forest health and restoration at Tomales Bay State Park on both sides of Tomales Bay, shown in green up here. Second, fuels reduction at Marin City, which is a bit at the bottom. And lastly, not shown is workforce development with the Fire Foundry blended into both components. This project is a wonderful collaboration between the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy, State Parks, Marin Fire Department, and Marin Wildfire Prevention Authority. Next slide, please. This project will help implement part of the Marin Regional Forest Health Strategy, which was funded by the Conservancy. The Forest Health Strategy is a science-based and data-driven framework for public land managers and decision-makers in Marin County. It was created to assess forest health prioritize actions to increase forest resilience across the region. To achieve this, the strategy was developed and utilized best available data, expert analysis, scientific understanding, and local knowledge to explore the distribution, composition, and conditions for key forest types in Marin, assess the impacts of forest stressors, and provide multi-benefit framework for solutions. Treatments and solutions are designed to provide cultural and community benefits in order to restore forest health and resilience. The Tomales Bay project is an extremely high priority project for this plan. At Tomales Bay State Park, this project aims to restore forest health between 100 and 150 acres within the 2,433-acre state park, focused on restoration of bishop pines, like the one seen here. Bishop pines are closed cone conifers, which create fire-dependent forests. Fire has been excluded with the interruption of tribal stewardship, combined with colonization and the legacy of modern fire suppression. As a result, these bishop pines are aging out without regeneration. Without active restoration, we will lose bishop pine forests, which are sensitive natural communities and very important natural resources. Treatments will focus on treatments to promote bishop pine regeneration. Those treatments can include initial thinning, piling, biomass treatment, and prescribed fire burning, such as broadcast burning and pile burning, in collaboration with the Fire Foundry and state parks. This project targets a high priority ecological restoration treatment area, and work will be done in close collaboration with the Federated Indians of Granton Rancherita. Targeted vegetation communities include conifer forests dominated by bishop pine, evergreen hardwood types such as California bay and coast live oak, and mixed hardwood type conifer areas. This includes one of the finest remaining groves of bishop pine in California, the Jepson Memorial Grove. Next slide, please. The second site is in Marin City and maintains a contiguous field reduction zone between wildland areas and approximately 409 structures located in a low-income disadvantaged community in Marin County. This component of the project includes management of ladder fuels and woody understory vegetation throughout thinning of and removal of dead and dying shrubs, tree limbs, and non-native species seen here. Next slide, please. This new fuel reduction zone will be approximately 2 miles in length and spans approximately 13 parcels owned and managed by National Park Service, Marin Housing Authority, and private land holdings. This will create 8 acres of initial fuel break construction and maintain the entire 22-acre project footprint with any remaining funds. Next slide, please. The final component of this project is working with the Fire Foundry. The Fire Foundry is a workforce development program partnership between Conservation Corps North Bay, College of Marin, Marin Wildfire Prevention Authority, Marin County Fire Department, and a few other agencies. Marin County Fire Department manages recruitment, onboarding, mentorship, wraparound services, and partner coordination for all recruits. Participants received a paid job in fire prevention with the county so they can afford to fully engage in the one-year program, which covers the cost of Fire Academy prerequisite classes, counseling services, housing at fire stations, hands-on skills training, mentorship, and more. The goal is to provide recruits with the training and skills needed to enter the fire service and work with agencies like Marin County Fire Department. The program is specifically aimed at protecting women, at propelling women and people of color into sustainable careers in the fire service. Our funding would enable the Fire Foundry to train and provide personal protective equipment for the program participants. This will result in 11 days of wildland firefighter training as required and wildland fire training safety equipment for 3 cohorts of 24 Fire Foundry recruits. Ideally, Fire Foundry members will conduct work in Tomales Bay State Parks and Marin City. Next slide, please. Thank you so much for listening to this. Representatives from Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy and State Parks are online and happy to answer questions, as am I.
All right, are there any comments or questions? Are there any public comments?
We have no public comments.
Okay, do I hear a motion to approve item 16?
I approve.
I second.
All right, was that Ms. Sterling and who's
Marcella.
The second? Mars, were you the second?
Yep, okay. Second.
Thank you. Okay, call the roll, please, Paul.
Ms. Hart?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groutage?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 16 is approved.
Okay, thank you, Lily. Now we're moving to Explore the Coast, which is a statewide project, and that will be presented by Sarah Haugen and Ellie Bent.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. My name is Sarah Haugen, a project manager and member of the Explore the Coast Committee. I'm joined by Elle Bent, our 2024 Sea Grant Fellow. Today, we will be presenting 14 projects for your consideration as part of the Explore the Coast, or ETC, grant program. Next slide, please. The staff recommendation and selection of the recommended projects has been a collaborative effort of many people on the Explore the Coast Committee and our advisory board. Next slide. Today, staff recommends a disbursement of $994,197 to fund 13 nonprofit organizations and one tribe to run 14 projects that facilitate and enhance the public's opportunities to explore the California coast. For this round, project partners will leverage approximately $2.4 million in matching funds. We also received 26 letters of support for the projects we are recommending today. On the right, we have a photo from an event hosted by the Greater Fair Lawns Association, an organization that is requesting funding. Now I'll pass it to Elle, who will tell you more about the ETC grant program.
Thanks, Sarah. You can go to the next slide, please. The Conservancy aims to increase access to the coast for ETC priority communities. These communities may include lower-income families, people with disabilities, people of color, or indigenous people. The program is based on the belief that visiting the beach and the coast can bring people joy and healing, and can organically inspire stewardship. The program has served tens of thousands of Californians, many of whom visited the coast for the first time through an ETC grant. Next slide, please. Staff aims to equitably distribute ETC grant funding and better serve priority communities. To better achieve these goals, Conservancy staff created an advisory board for the program in 2019. Today, our board consists of 11 members, pictured here. The board provides input on the application process, application review, and ongoing management of the grant program. Next slide, please. This year, we had a competitive grant round where we received 116 applications. After staff review of the applications, a subset was sent to the advisory board for review. After multiple meetings to discuss these applications, the advisory board and staff selected 14 projects to recommend for funding. On the right, we have photos from an event hosted by DiverseFi, which is one of the organizations that are requesting funding today. In this presentation, we will showcase one example project from each region that was selected. Next slide, please. So on the left, the first program that we will highlight is from the Dry Creek Rancheria Band of Pomo Indians here in the North Coast. This organization will reconnect 250 tribal citizens from the Dry Creek Rancheria Band of Pomo Indians with their coastal heritage through immersive family camps, fostering environmental and cultural awareness while promoting indigenous food sovereignty practices. And then on the right, we are featuring Black Surf Santa Cruz, a Central Coast program which will provide 660 individuals from historically excluded groups in the Central Coast and San Francisco Bay regions with transformative surfing experiences aimed at fostering belonging, mental well-being, and equitable access to ocean activities. I'll now pass it back to Sarah.
Thanks, Elle. Next slide, please. Next, we'll talk about the Insight Garden Program, which serves many areas of the state, but we're calling it the Bay Area example. This multi-region program will provide 300 formerly incarcerated individuals and some of their family members from multiple regions of the state with enjoyable and healing day trips and camping trips along the coast. And finally, in the South Coast, we have the Orange County Adult Achievement Center, or My Day Counts, and their program will provide approximately 47 adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities who have limited mobility or non-ambulatory with enjoyable and adaptive coastal exploration activities. Next slide, please. And so we have a member of our advisory board here with us on Zoom who would like to offer some commentary on her experience and support for the Explore the Coast grant program. Please welcome Olivia Van Dam.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. My name is Olivia Van Dam. My pronouns are she, her. I'm calling from Rametush Ohlone land, also known as San Francisco. I'm originally from the Inland Empire. I'm a Chicana, I'm a surfer, an environmentalist, and I currently work as a community science coordinator at the California Academy of Sciences. I've served on the ETC advisory board for 4 years, and it has been one of the highest honors in my career thus far. As a lifelong California resident, it's been a true joy to give back in this way. I've been involved as a volunteer or a staff member at several nonprofit organizations that have been recipients of this funding. In fact, one of my jobs at City Surf Project in San Francisco was completely funded by the ETC grant. And it was back then that my program manager with SCC, Avra Heller, was kind and amazing at helping me learn about more opportunities to support the Coastal Conservancy. And naturally, I wanted to continue working with this incredible staff that you have at SCC. The staff who work on this project are truly wonderful, caring, thoughtful, and they center equity in a way that exceeds the norm for many state agencies. Collaboration and building reciprocal relationships are cornerstone values of mine, and this position has taught me about the power of these two values and practices, collaboration and reciprocal relationship building. I'd like to also thank my fellow advisory board members for their incredible insight, sharing their lived experiences of being professors or community leaders, working at foundations and philanthropies, scientists, surfers, swimmers, social workers, and as well as holding multiple identities as Brown, Black, Asian, immigrant, veteran, or disabled folks who enjoy and care for the California coast as much as I do. It's been a wonderful part of this experience to work in collaboration and connection and have powerful insight from this board, from real people who are on the ground across the state and at the beach all the time. Collectively, we are able to make tough choices on which tribal partners and nonprofits should get this funding. And working together has been truly a great part of being on this board. As a young girl experiencing tide pools in Southern California with my sister and seeing sea stars and anemones with a docent at Corona Del Mar, to now being an adult and being a coordinator at a science museum, helping facilitate tide pool experiences through iNaturalist and helping organize statewide coastal campaigns, including Snapshot Cal Coast, and working with the CNRA and CDFW on California Biodiversity Day and Latino Conservation Week, I'm in my dream role, and this role has been a part of that. I'm a firm believer that the experiences of having mentors and teachers, family members, and people in the ocean and the science and naturalist-related jobs who were Latine and women and shared similar identities as me and my peers absolutely helped me believe that I could accomplish and pursue these dreams. My dreams of being a surfer and catching waves, my dreams of seeing nudibranchs in the tide pools, my dreams of being mentored by incredible scientists, my dreams of being a Californian who the next generation can look up to and continue to see themselves in the coastal world. The incredible 14 organizations on the recommendation for funding today are doing just that for their respective communities through showing their leadership and representation and increasing access to the coast in ways that are culturally relevant and fun and welcoming and immersive. From the examples that the staff members just shared with you, including Queer Surf, led by Kyla and Nick, providing opportunities for the queer community along the whole coast through overnight camps and surf lessons and queer tide pooling sessions, this is an incredible example of ways that we can continue to foster and show true representation of Californians. It's really worth celebrating, and I highly recommend that you visit their websites, see their videos, learn more about these leaders giving their heart and their expertise in their community building and cultural practices in the center of this work. The work of the Tribal Marine Stewards Network and the work of the 30 by 30 team on the Tribal Nature-Based Solutions Program is truly in alignment with the goals of this program as well. And I really look forward to seeing the way that the SCC can continue to support tribal communities and Native leadership along the coast. We're all on Native land, and to continue to remember that and prioritize tribal knowledge and coastal access is something that has been really important to me and my service on this board. and community and celebration for my time on this advisory board for 4 years. Thank you so much. Please vote yes on today's recommendation. And please continue to fund this important state grant program for many years to come. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Van Dam.
We do have one more slide. Thank you, Olivia. Next slide, please. Thanks, Olivia. Yeah, so that here are a few more pictures from organizations that are requesting your funding today. Thank you for listening. That concludes our presentation, and we're happy to take any questions you have.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
There's comment, for sure.
All right. Well, why don't we start with Ms. Hart, and then we'll go to cover everyone.
Great. I just wanted to thank everyone involved in this, and it's just such an incredible program, and like with the Commission's Whale Tail Grants, which also go hand in hand with these, finding these groups and providing these programs to folks and a lot of youth is such a big deal. I wanted to call out for myself a group that I've been involved with, not obviously in relation to this. In fact, I wasn't aware of this at all and haven't been in touch with them lately. Just want to make that clear. Ms. Roach. No. but it's Project Avery, and this is a project that provides youth from lower-income households that their parents are in prison with this program. And I was just so blown away to think that they would have an opportunity to go to camp at Point Reyes and access the coast. And a lot of people don't believe it, but even people in Marin, but certainly in L.A., a lot of kids have never been to see the ocean. And that's true, I'm sure, for a lot of the kids in these programs. It's just life-changing. I just wanted to call out Project Avery and express my gratitude. And, of course, all the groups are just absolutely incredible. So thank you so much.
Wow. All right. Are there any public comments?
More board comments.
Pardon?
More board comments.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, certainly. Mars?
Well, I will echo Ms. Hart. It is hard to say that there is a favorite day here at the Conservancy, but this is very much it. Again, someone that was, sorry. I also do like Wrinkle Butt in the South Bay, but it is just such a testament to the change. Again, and I've said it before and I'll continue to say it. It is very easy to talk about this. It is very easy to posture about this. It is very, very difficult and hard to make it happen and to deliver this and find the people and steward them and work with them to get through this process. And this is a testament to the fabulous staff that we have, to our fellow folks there, and actually deliver and put it on the ground. And it's very exciting. I will say also, it's very exciting to see some of the folks that I haven't seen for a while here on the list. Also have not been in touch with them, Ana Huacalmaca, some of the other folks, obviously, Salter Roots, and also Olivia here talking to us today. So thank you so much to the advisory board. And again, thank you to the board. And yes, I think we should continue to do this and ideally grow it.
And yes, you'd like to move approval of this?
I will be delighted and honored to move this.
Okay. Who else would like to speak? Brian?
Yeah, it's just want to echo the comments we just heard. What an incredible program. This is one that the Secretary Cox talks about a lot as he's going around the state. And our Access Deputy Gloria Sandoval talks about it a lot, too. So just kudos on the program. I just wanted to get an idea. I think you had mentioned this earlier, but do we know how many people have been served by this program over the years? Or do we have an estimate?
Tens of thousands.
Well, I don't know. Do we know?
I think this is first.
Oh, maybe
that's why. Yeah.
Let's Thank consult the staff rec. We don't have it memorized, but let's see.
Maybe you can hear about the next year.
Aha, we found it. Okay. Well, this year will be 6,000 people. And then, okay, that's this year. Da, 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 da. Wow, it does not say over the period of time. We have it somewhere.
Okay. I just want to give Elle a tough question. I think this is her first presentation. So,
Thank you.
Mission accomplished.
I hope you do. I hope you don't make a habit of hyperbole, El. don't do that either. It is your first time, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How do you feel, nervous?
Oh, great.
Oh, got information.
185,000 people.
That's good for your first time.
That's just amazing to think about, you know, 185,000 people who have never been to the coast or may not have ever been to the coast, to get them out there. It's a great program.
Yeah, it is. Well, we have a motion, and Ms. Sterling, do you want to second this?
Yes, please.
Okay. Any other public comments?
We have no public comments.
All right, let's go ahead, Paul, and call the roll on item 17.
Ms. Hart?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudon?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Yes.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 17 is approved.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good job. She's so cute, isn't she? All right, now we are at actually the end of our projects, and we move on to Conservancy member comments. Do we have any comments? I wanted to make a quick one to Sue Corberly and everyone else that participated yesterday. I don't know if Sue's still here, but she was here earlier. But anyway, what a great field trip that was, a fantastic project. I'm so proud of the Yurok tribe that is just accomplishing so much, not only there, but throughout their region. And thank you for inviting us. We had a very good field trip. It was well organized and really informative. All right, are there public comments that are not on our... go ahead.
I was just going to piggyback and say thanks to the staff. I know it's a lift to take us on site tours, but very much appreciated. And as someone that sits on multiple boards and commissions, it's nice to get out and see what's actually happening with the money that we move. And particularly want to echo the partnerships with the tribes. I know this is something that is both obviously a high priority for the administration, a high priority for the secretary, but to actually see it happening in action is an amazing thing. And I will go ahead and tell WCB that they are falling behind because they never take us on site tours. So just want to lift it up that you guys are a little ahead there.
Good. Are there any other comments? Any public comments that are not on the agenda, items not on the agenda?
We have one public comment.
Okay, let's go ahead with that then.
All right, Walter, go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, board members. Walter Lamb representing the Bayano Wetlands Land Trust. In listening to your discussion of an earlier item today, I heard you reference some basic governance principles that we believe need to be applied to your handling of the Bayano wetlands. And so Board Member Hart, you complimented the annual financial report for how it so clearly explains how the money was spent and what was accomplished. And that's exactly what we've been asking for with regard to the Bayano wetlands funding authorized almost 3.5 years ago. We're asking for an update on how much of that funding was actually spent, the status of the unspent funds, and what was accomplished with the funds that were spent. And to us, that seems like fairly basic information. Likewise, Chair Bosco, you suggested that the low on funding could be an opportunity to look more closely at the progress of projects that have already been funded. And again, that's exactly what we'd like to see happen with the Bayano wetlands. And we think it's overdue given your roughly $15 million in funding authorizations over 20 years. Last week, there was a court ruling with regards to our complaint against the Conservancy that rejected all of the arguments put forth by your legal counsel to dismiss our claims or to strike portions of our complaint. You know, most importantly to me was that, you know, we had made some allegations that your staff took offense to and, you know, claimed were ad hominem attacks, and the court agreed with us that they were not ad hominem attacks. And so that was important. We don't do ad hominem attacks. We do fact-based allegations. But, you know, remaining silent, as you have on such an important ecosystem, I think is sending the wrong message that you might like to think. And I know it's human nature to want to focus on the projects that you think have gone well and that reflect positively on the Conservancy. It's just important for the people that you represent that when a project doesn't go as planned, that you don't lose sight of that, that you continue to pay attention to it, find ways to improve it. And I.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lamb. Any other public comments?
We have no more public comments.
Okay. We do have to have a closed session. So that will mean, I guess, everyone clear the room, and except for the board members.
And Chair Bosco, just for the record, the closed session is on items 20A and B.
Oh, okay. All right, the Conservancy is now back in open session. And during the closed session, the Conservancy Board heard advice from legal counsel on closed session agenda items A and B, and gave direction to legal counsel on those items. That concludes our agenda. I would like to thank the IT folks. They did a great job.
Yay!
Flawless, I think, which is really saying something. Our next meeting is scheduled for November 21st, 2024, and will be in Oakland at the Elihu Harris State Building. We'll need a quorum of board members in person for that. So thank you, everyone, and we're stand adjourned.